And so you moved from working for Mark Phillips. Where did you go and work after that?
I left Mark Phillips when there was yet another takeover, Redmond's, Redmond Heenan International. I think probably that's about the worst time I ever remember for the company. A lot of people were fired. At that time, Jim Fielding had a secretary called Gladys Harrison. Her married name was Green, but she was always known as Miss Harrison. She became so upset that I think it contributed to her illness. Seeing all these people that she'd been there since the year dot, she knew them so well. And she began to, I think she took time off work. I don't think she ever came back. And at that time, of course, Jim Fielding needed a stand-in secretary. So we took it in turns as best we could, because we all had our own bosses. It was not a popular job because he was hugely intimidating. He probably was just as lovely, just as kind when you got to know him, but I found him most intimidating. And you never knew when he'd descend, when the car would come whizzing in, sometimes possibly 5 to 5 when you were looking forward to getting off. But you certainly wouldn't even have thought about it. You'd go in and take your notes. This went on for some months, actually, and I shared it with Liz. And just about the time when my boss was having, Mark Phillips, was having to go permanently to Worcester, and therefore it just wasn't practical to retain me as his secretary, it was suggested that I would like to go and work full-time for Mr. Fielding. And I was just getting married at that time, September 68. And I thought, there is now no way I can put the commitment in that you obviously, I had done for years for Mr. Phillips, and I knew I'd have to do it more so for Jim Fielding. So I said no. And because of that, there really wasn't a job for me. So I left shortly after that, or early 69, and worked for BRS Parcels, a deeply boring job, which was really just marking time until my husband got a job in Birmingham, and we moved away from Gloucester. Lost touch with Fielding's.
And so, in the bits of time that you've filled in with Liz for Mr. Fielding, what was the nature of your work for him?
It was mostly letters. In fact, I don't think I remember doing anything else, certainly not meetings. It was purely his letters, but it was the fact that he would come in at any moment unexpectedly. He was incredibly fussy about presentation. We were all pretty good by that time. We'd been director's secretaries for a long time, but we nevertheless had to have it totally, utterly immaculate and fast. That makes him sound so fearsome. I'm sure he was lovely, really, but as very young secretaries, it was quite intimidating. I don't think we enjoyed it. Also, because all we ever saw were just the boring letters and the rushing in and perhaps having to work late. We didn't get the fun bits, the more interesting bits of the job.
And thinking about presentation, you talked about the types of letterheading that you had. When that Redmond takeover happened, did the correspondence that you were, the paper that you were using to correspond on, did that change at all?
I think I must have left before that happened. Yeah, I don't remember that happening at all.
And did you change offices when you went to be secretary for Jim Fielding, or were you still based in the same office as you were filling in for him?
No, it was the same corridor, but it was the opposite end. An office about 4 times the size of ours, just for one, and his office was similarly about 3 times the size of the other directors. But yes, you had to be there when you were working for him, to be on call for the phone. This had its disadvantages. It was the only office on that corridor, big though it was, without a window out over the car park. So Liz and I had a system. If one of us was working for him, the other would keep an eye open, and as the car swept in, we'd quickly press the button on the phone and say, he's arrived, so at least you weren't surprised. It was very easy to be surprised, because he could go into his office, bypassing yours, and there you are, busy working or whatever, and not even having any idea that he's already arrived and in the next office. So Liz and I used to prime each other where he was.
And what was that office like? You said it was about four times the size of other secretarial offices that you worked in. Was it of a higher standard in other ways because you were the secretary there for the managing director?
I think the only thing I can remember, it was nothing very different, same cabinets, very little extra furniture, but it had carpet.
And what about Jim Fielding's office itself? Did you ever have occasion to enter his office?
Oh, yes. All the time when I was working for him, yes, you would go in to take dictation. No, I just remember it was huge, not unlike the boardroom, probably slightly larger, oak-panelled, deep carpets, vast desk, leather swivel chairs. Yes, impressive.
What colour were the carpets?
Oh. If I had to guess, and it's a long time, it's over 40 years, I think blue, dark blue, but I'm not certain.
And were there any pictures on the wall similar to the oil portrait of Mr. Platt? Any photographs, any paintings?
Not that I noticed, but I would have had my eyes glued to my shorthand pad.
And did you have to do any other tasks as well as taking dictation, writing correspondence? Would you have had to take in refreshment for Mr. Fielding at all or anything like that?
Oh, yes. We would do that, but that was fairly ordinary. Yes, just take him in regular cups of tea. Yes, but not a lot of other things.
So he would ring through for you and say, I want some tea, and you would ring down to Mrs. Palmer, and Mrs. Palmer would prepare this tea. Is that how it would work, or you would prepare the tea? Oh, sorry, not Mrs. Palmer, Mrs. Jones.
That's right, Mrs. Jones. yes, exactly that. It was mainly a question of just being there. You were very conscious that Mr. Fielding needed somebody there in the office. If he was there, you had to be there for the phone, for whatever he wanted. I have a feeling standards might have slipped in the ensuing years. I mean, I wasn't here, but I can't say for certain. But I do know that not long after I left, Mr. Fielding was actually prevailed upon to have a part-time secretary. Now, that would have just been the most unthinkable thing in the whole world, for a part-time secretary to be good enough. So I think things, mine probably, and my contemporaries, we were probably the last ones of the original, what do you call it, private secretary PAs, as they used to be. And things were a lot more easygoing. I might be quite wrong here. I should be very happy for somebody to say, no, this went on for years. But I think things were not quite so tightly run as they used to be.
And so after you'd done that little bit of filling in, as you said, you left the company, and that was the last, I suppose, job that you had for the company. You never returned to the company after that.
No, I didn't. It rather coloured me in some ways for other companies, which was a shame. I remember going for a job at Roots Parts, the most dreadful place, and some man interviewed me, and he seemed a little unsure as to whether or not I could cope with the job, and I was fuming inside. I just wanted to think, I've worked for Jim Fielding, who is about the most senior director you could possibly get in all of Gloucester. I could gobble your stuff up, but I didn't say a word. It was a lovely, lovely place to work, and you did such interesting things. And as I say, it was a proper secretary PA's job. Not that long after, computers happened, word processors happened, and shorthand, I don't know whether it's used at all these days, but it's certainly not used as much. So it was a different era for secretaries.
Just thinking about shorthand, how did you learn shorthand? Was that something you learned at school, or was that an additional course that you would have taken after school itself?
No. I went to Denmark Road School, got my O-levels, and then I left and did a year at Gloucester Technical College. And that encompassed pretty well everything you'd need to know. You did a little bit of accounts, a little bit of business French, shorthand, typing, and speech training, believe it or not. And then I was quite keen on shorthand and typing, and I also wanted a reasonably senior job. So I carried on afterwards at night school, and I got higher shorthand and typing speeds. And I think I got up to about 140 words a minute shorthand and the stage three typing.
Wow, that's a hugely fast speed of shorthand. You're only the second person that I know that could do 140 words a minute. The only other person is my gran, who was also a PA secretary, not for Fieldings.
She's my era. There you are, you see. I went to a lovely man for the extra training near the park, Mr. Fairs, and he had it was only his own private house, and he had these little desks in his front room and just taught girls extra shorthand and typing.
And how did you become that quick? What were the secret tricks and the techniques that you needed to be able to be so fast at shorthand?
There's no tricks at all. You just work at it. You just carry on and typing. I was, funnily enough, it was harder to learn typing than learn shorthand, because typing depends on your state of mind and your mood. And we were advised at Technical College to do anything it took to calm ourselves down, even eat chocolate. So I did. Used to feel sick at the end of an exam, but I'd eat chocolate, and yes, I got through it. And in the end, you've no idea what your fingers are doing. Your brain and your fingers work. There's something that cuts out completely in the middle. Your fingers work far faster than your brain can tell it to. Shorthand, I think I enjoyed because I love art, and I paint now. And it was just artistic, the lovely swirls. And that seems a silly reason, but I just enjoyed doing it. And I found it easy to make the patterns and the little, whatever they're called, symbols. And I was determined to get good at it, so I just kept going. You listen to tapes a lot, and the tapes are especially, in the days when we had tapes, the tapes are set at a certain speed, and you just graduate up and up and up and up. And then, of course, Mr. Fairs would dictate to us. And there's nothing better for getting really quick at it than taking minutes of meetings. You have to be really quick for that.
And would those minutes be almost verbatim by the time you'd got up to 140 words a minute?
140 words a minute, yeah. Well, yes, they were, because I didn't understand enough of it, certainly initially, to know what I could leave out. So I used to get most of it down. Then I would edit it when I typed it back. But yes, it was pretty well verbatim.
And the course that you did at Gloucester Tech, that was a secretarial course, was it?
Yes. Gloucester Tech, all gone now. Tragic site, isn't it? It looks like a bomb site, yeah.
Yeah, the building still is empty. There's nothing.
Just a shell.
Yeah.